Welcome to What's Poppin'. This week, my guest is Kathy Barco. Kathy, thank you for coming on the show.
Of course. Happy to be here.
Kathy, the same question I ask for everybody right away is, how long have you lived in the area?
Ooh, that's a great question. I have been here essentially almost all my whole adult life.
Okay.
My husband, Joseph, and I moved here about 33 years ago. So we moved here in 1990. We've lived in Fremont, and now we're in Union City.
In Union City now, mm-hmm. Okay. And what brought you to the area?
Ah, that is a great and long God story. And it kind of ties into how long we have been here. Yeah. Because, let's see, my husband's best friend, Jim, moved out here for a job in 1990.
Okay.
Joseph helped him move out, like U-Haul, and move across the country.
Drive across country. From where?
From Michigan.
Michigan, okay.
And then at the hotel up the street from here, they opened the phone book and looked in the yellow pages for a Lutheran church and found Prince of Peace. And okay. So they went the first Sunday that Jim arrived. And then when Joseph and I moved out here 6 months later, we came to church here with our friend Jim.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you've been here a pretty long time then.
Yeah.
All right. Seeing a lot of changes at Prince of Peace.
Definitely.
Yeah. What's the, this wasn't on your sheet that I gave you ahead of time, but what's the biggest change at Prince of Peace since you've been here?
I think it spans a lot of things. So that we were in the old sanctuary when we came here and Pastor Zelt wasn't here, right? There was different pastors at that time. So just from the physical place of where we worshiped, we've been here from the building campaigns, seeing the new sanctuary, all of the mud. My daughter's picture was in the newspaper when we dedicated the new building of her looking into the baptismal font. Okay. It was very sweet. And while some things have changed, some things still feel very friendly and warm and familiar, really, about this place. Still my church, my people here.
Nice. What was your favorite working experience or job? Or is your favorite working experience or job?
I feel really blessed that I have always had jobs that I liked.
Huh.
A lot. And maybe it's because when I stopped liking them, I moved on to the next job.
Could be.
But from the very first paid job on the books that I had, I was a certified nurse's assistant as a nurse at a nursing home. I really loved most of that work. I have done home health care, waitressing, social work, like the whole span of things. And when I looked back, I think, gosh, I love all of that. So I'm not sure I have a favorite.
But nothing sticks out.
But what I am going to say is I think the favorite one is what I'm doing now as a life and professional coach. Just the fact that I get to walk alongside people and helping them kind of lean into God's calling for them. And sometimes that's the struggles that God has them in this stage of life and age of life. Sometimes it's pursuing a dream or a bigger purpose that God has put on their hearts.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it's both like unsticking things and figuring out our motives and our intentions and then making strategic steps forward that help address some of that. And I just love that work.
That feels like something that you would like. So it's a combination of asking the right questions and then equipping the right skills.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's not even, some of it's equipping. I'd say asking the right questions, identifying the skills and the strengths that people already have. And then also, where new skills are needed, kind of helping leverage that. But a lot of it is pointing out how God has already equipped
people
that life circumstance that has brought them where they are, and that you can kind of trust where you're at because that's where he's put you, and he promises to never leave or forsake us in all of that.
Nice. This leads us into the message from last Sunday. And so do you have two things you thought were good, interesting, or made you think a little bit from last Sunday's message?
I had two things that had me thinking a lot.
All right.
From it.
Lay it on me.
And they're kind of, you'll see the connection or the relationship to them. But there have been times in my life that I really thought if God was just more present or more visible, or I felt that he was closer here, that I would have deeper faith and be able to move forward in a place of trusting him more and being more confident about all of that. And I found it so ironic that in Psalm 78, it talks so much about times when God was with his people in Egypt, in the wilderness. He was so powerfully there with them. And even as they were resettling in the promised land, God was abundantly there.
Yeah.
And yet his people didn't trust him more.
Kept forgetting.
And in addition to forgetting, willfully chose other things and complained about it, right? Complained that he wasn't enough for
them. About the manna they've been eating for too long. Yeah.
Yes. And so then on top of that, God doesn't just smite them or rebuke them or walk away. He actually gives them meat to go along with the manna.
Right.
So he kind of, in some ways, like indulges their request.
Yeah.
And still leads them and was still very faithful to them throughout that, despite their childishness and rebellion and lack of gratitude and lack of even awe or appreciation for kind of who he was in these incredibly miraculous things that he saw.
It's one of those things where you really do see God as a father in the Old Testament era, you know, and part of it, I think of this because, like, I think about the manna, and then he sends, okay, you want meat? I'll give you meat. You're going to have quail coming out of your nostrils, right? It's like, that's a dad thing right there, you know? Like okay, I'm going to take care of you, but I'm going to get your attention while I do
it. Yes, very learning moment, for sure.
Yeah, learning moment,
It really just reminded me of, like, the magnitude of God's love for me. And then furthermore from that, the power of his forgiveness when my heart wanders or my faith is lukewarm, that he welcomes me back fully in all of that. And the process to kind of just recommit myself to that level of trust and faith every day, even when sometimes we're not feeling it.
Right, yeah. You're not always going to feel it, but you're also, it's going to sound bad, but you're not special. Like you're not the first person to go through this. And so God is aware. This is kind of how people are. And he's here for you because he knows what you are.
Yes.
Yeah.
He expects us to be lukewarm, right? Yeah. That's part of the human condition.
Yep. Yep.
Or having those doubts or having times perhaps where our faith is super strong and other times where it feels like God is distant and having to really intellectually work through all that and let our heart draw near to him.
He's going to work through it with you.
Yeah.
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 Good. Anything else?
Yeah. So here's the second one. The second piece was a lot more like practical in my life, more pragmatic around all of that, and affects how I outwardly live my faith.
Okay.
So, Pastor Zelt made a comment that was about one of the challenges about building faithful generations of believers is when we believers fail to speak openly about the faith that he has given us and God's provision throughout the generations.
Right. We're hiding it if we're not talking about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And for me, that was like a... It was a like, yes, 100%. Like, I resonated and connected with it. Mm. And then it also was this, like, gut check.
The conviction.
Like, oh, I am a hindrance to generations of faith when I do not speak about how God is working in my life, to myself, to my husband, to those in my circles, to my children, to my grandson, to my grandchildren that are not yet here, and to, you know, passing that on to the great-grandchildren that are not yet even here.
And it doesn't have to be the awkward conversation all the time either, right?
Right.
It doesn't have to be, what they say, they call it extra Christian, right? Mm. Where someone's always talking about the blessings of God and all, like, no, it doesn't have to be that. It's just pointing out how God is active, you know, and how wonderful he is that he does expect you to doubt once in a while and to have, you know, weaker faith but strong faith, and he expects you to be a human, you know, and he's with you no matter what, and sharing your experiences in life with your family and friends where that's happened is a powerful thing that that doesn't need to be forced and can become a very natural thing.
I internalized and was taught when I was a kid that mm-hmm. it was sufficient enough to live my life expressing the love of Jesus in actions. And that was a sufficient witness of my faith, like how I dealt with strangers, how I was generous with my resources, how I controlled my anger, controlled my words.
You call that Christian politeness.
Yeah. But that was enough.
And that's enough.
Sufficient. People will know that you're God's disciple. That's all you have to do.
Yeah.
And so it very much, I did not grow up and was not really expected to speak about my faith. Faith was a very compartmentalized thing that we did on Sundays.
Yeah.
And this, you know, the older I've gotten, the really much more that has been challenged about how that isn't biblical, that isn't faithful, how God is calling us to more. And Psalm 78 just really was much more of kind of, reminding about how important that verbal part of our faith really is. That it isn't sufficient to just have actions that are nice, kind, good things that every human does.
Anyone can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very good Buddhists and Hindus do that.
Mm-hmm. Right. But they don't have the gospel.
Right. And that really is the difference about what makes us have God's faithfulness, like in our hearts, in a way that has legacy and longevity and reminds us about that. I mean,
it's not just about us.
Yeah.
Right. And so the idea of, you know, internalizing your faith on Sunday mornings, just be nice to people, really is, I'm good, right? And so I don't care about if you're good or not. You know what I mean? Like, I'm good with God, and so I'm good. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't necessarily have to work on you being good with God or not, right? Mm-hmm. And so this idea that you got to pass around generations makes it outside of yourself, makes your faith more than just about you and Jesus. It's about us and Jesus.
And about, the responsibility then of that. Like, I could tell you so many stories about how God has been faithful in my life. Like, I know for a fact I only went to school at Michigan State and met my husband there as a result of God's hand in that.
Yeah.
My brother was killed in a car accident when he was 17, and I know without a doubt that the only reason my dad has come to faith is through that tragedy.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, my consulting practice only exists because I prayed to God about what was next for my family, and he delivered that solution to me. Yeah. I know those stories. People close in my circle maybe have heard those stories, but I thought of those as examples of things that I can give in witness and testimony to God's faithfulness that I can tell them so that my children can tell them, and they can, we can keep passing that down as we think about how God has been faithful, not just to his people in general, but to our family, like to us.
Yeah, and specifically.
Both as a model that hopefully encourages them to be more aware in sharing their faith, but also as kind of this history, this generational stories that we tell about our traditions and how our family came to be, that I'm weaving in God's faithfulness in all of that.
That's really cool. Thank you for your insights. So now
you're welcome.
I've got a question for you, which will give us a little insight into your personality, I think. I try to make these last questions personality questions in a sense. So what is your favorite board or card game, and what makes it your favorite?
All right. So I am a sucker for a good board game or a good card game, with the exception of Monopoly. Like childhood trauma.
Like most people. Yeah.
Most people in big families with competitive siblings.
Do not like Monopoly. Risk.
And it takes forever. Right. It takes forever to play. My favorite game is a card game called Golf. Like golf as in
Swinging the club.
And the connection to golf is the object of the game is to try to get as few points as possible.
Okay.
Right? That's really the only connection to golf.
Low score.
Yeah, low score.
Yeah.
Low score is the winner. So you play with 6 cards, you play your hand all open-faced, and you try to get pairs that cancel out the points that you get. And so then at the end of the game, however many face cards you have that are not canceled out by a pair, that's how you get assigned points.
Okay.
But I just love this game because it is easy to learn.
Okay.
It is easy to teach. It is a little bit of luck. Whatever cards you happen to get are the cards you happen to get.
Not all strategy.
Not all strategy. Yeah. A little bit of strategy.
But some.
But not enough. Like, you can carry on a conversation while you're playing. Mm-hmm. And it's so simple to learn that even like five-year-olds, seven-year-olds, you can play it with people of all ages.
Yeah.
So I love it because of its inclusivity.
Yeah.
And the fact that it allows kind of something to be going on in the background while you're also talking about life and what's new today, and, you know, did you know about this? Did you know about that? Hey, I remember a time when. And then you'll have a conversation like, ooh, that's a good card right there. But you can intersperse all of this, just time to be with
each other. It's a conversational game.
Yeah.
So, bonus question for you then. When's the last time you played golf, the card game?
I played golf, the card game, last weekend.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
With who?
My daughter was here. My daughter that lives in Poway. Mm-hmm. We had a baby shower for her up here.
Oh.
So she came, and then her two sisters were here. And my sister flew in as a surprise from Michigan along with my niece.
Surprise for you or for your daughter?
For my daughter.
Okay.
I knew they were coming.
Okay.
So literally, like, the shower was Saturday. They got in 1:30 in the morning.
Oh,
on
gosh.
Saturday morning. And then they were here, and then they stayed an extra day. And so that's what we did. We had a Sunday fun day where we played golf and hung out and
nice.
Told stories. And they had never played.
Yeah.
So it wasn't something that we had learned as a kid because my sister didn't even know how to play it.
Yeah.
And so we were able to do that with them and game upon game. And my niece is super competitive. So
yeah.
Once she got the hang of the game, let's go again. We're going again. We're going again.
Nice.
Hours we played that game.
Hours. Nice.
Yeah.
Kathy, thank you so much for taking the time and being on the podcast. I appreciate it.
Sure. Nice being here with you.